Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP The Bulletin, Your AARP, Where We Stand. AARP wants to help your community. Grants and fitness parks are improving life across America. Like most Americans, I am looking forward to the summer. Whoops, we're almost over that. And the opportunity to get out of the house and enjoy the outdoors. But we still have lots of time for that. As we approach our first summer since the end of COVID-19 public health emergency, towns and cities across the nation are also bouncing back, focusing even more on the well-being of their people. With AARP's long-standing support for livable communities, we have created several exciting ways to help. First, this month, AARP's state offices will announce the recipients of the 2023 Community Challenge Grants. These grants provide funding for quick action projects that can help communities become more livable for people of all ages. We're providing money for efforts to improve public spaces, transportation, housing, civic engagement, diversity and inclusion, and more. In its seventh year, the program is part of AARP's nationwide Livable Communities Initiative, which supports the efforts of cities, towns, neighborhoods, and rural areas to become great places for all residents, especially those aged 50 and older. Since 2017, AARP has awarded more than $12.7 million to over 1,060 projects through the Community Challenge to nonprofit organizations and government entities across all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. These initiatives range from the creation of a unique outdoor music park in Avoca, Iowa, to the provision of Wi-Fi-enabled tablets and digital literacy training to older public housing residents in Jersey City, New Jersey. This program has demonstrated that by supporting local leaders and organizations as they work to strengthen their communities, we can improve quality of life for the very young, the very old, and everyone in between. A second exciting way AARP is helping communities enhance the health and well-being of their residents is through our Community Fitness Initiative. In 2019, as part of the 60th anniversary celebration, we partnered with the nonprofit FitLot and committed to building AARP-sponsored outdoor fitness parks in every state. Each park is equipped with easy-to-use machines and stations built for people across the fitness and mobility spectrum. The parks are free and open to the public, and locals can sign up for guided classes to make full use of the equipment. These fitness parks are a tangible example of AARP's commitment to local communities and healthy aging. The outdoor exercise equipment encourages people of all ages to get out of the house, meet others, and stay fit. At the grand opening of our latest fitness park last November in the U.S. Virgin Islands, Calvert White, Commissioner of the 6th Department of Sports, Parks, and Recreation, said, with the opening of the AARP-sponsored outdoor fitness park, we now have another venue that can cater to our senior population. We look forward to producing programs at the park that will enhance the entire community's physical ability and quality of life. We opened the first outdoor fitness park in St. Petersburg, Florida, in April of 2019, and we now have opened 53 parks, one in every state. To find a park near you, go to fitlot.org/AARP. And to learn more about AARP's programs, events, and advocacy work in your state or territory, go to states.aarp.org and find out what is happening near you. Now let's look at a couple of questions for Medicare Made Easy. Will Medicare pay for an ultrasound scan of my breast? Here's how Medicare pays for breast screenings in general. For women on Medicare, due to disability, the program covers annual screening mammograms for those 40 and older. If you join Medicare at 65 or later, it will cover the full cost of annual screenings. There is no age cutoff. The situation changes if you are getting a diagnostic mammogram, which physicians may order if a lump or other breast issue emerges. In this case, you are subject to the 20% co-insurance under Medicare Part B. Some Medigap plans cover it. Medicare Advantage charges vary by plan. Now to your question. Sometimes, when a patient has a problem or dense breast tissue, a doctor will order an ultrasound, which generates a more detailed scan than a mammogram. If your doctor says you need an ultrasound or other scan when it's reasonable and necessary for the diagnosis or prevention of illness or disability, Part B will cover it with the same 20% coinsurance requirement. Note, Medicare Advantage plans must cover all Part B services that original Medicare does, but are allowed to ask for a doctor's pre-authorization to show that an additional test is medically necessary. Next, I'm on Medicaid and Medicare. If I lose my Medicaid eligibility due to the pandemic's end, will that affect my Medicare? Losing Medicaid coverage has no bearing on your eligibility for Medicare, but the change in your situation could make you want to switch your Medicare coverage, which you can do without penalty within 3 months of the state telling you your Medicaid coverage is ending or when your Medicaid ends, whichever is later. For those who are eligible for Medicare but were enrolled only in Medicaid, you can now enroll in Medicare without any late penalties. You have 6 months after your Medicaid coverage ends to sign up for Parts A and B. You can enroll in a Part D prescription drug plan within 3 months of getting notice that you're entitled to sign up for Medicare. Now, moving on to AARP the magazine for a little while, let's look at a few stories about real people. This one, She Works by Night. Empty Nest Mom is a snake hunter. Python catcher Anne Gordon Vega braves the Everglades to combat an invasive species. I never had a fear of snakes, but I also didn't know much about them until I joined Florida's Python Action Team. It started in 2017 when a friend of mine said, "I'm going python hunting." I didn't even know Florida had pythons, but I soon found out that they're an invasive species. They originally came here from Southeast Asia as exotic pets, and they're out-competing our native reptiles for food in the Everglades. Well, I asked to tag along with my friend, and we had the time of our lives. We never caught a python, but we rode around and saw all this wildlife. It was amazing. Before I knew it, I was applying with the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to become a python contractor. I earn a bounty of $50 or more for each python I catch. The fee is based on the length of the snake. When a python is attacking its prey, it will wrap itself around the animal to suffocate it. But the bigger the snake, the quicker they tire out. Anything bigger than 13 feet, I'm going to go over there, straddle it, and then put my hands around its neck. Then I literally just lie on it while it thrashes around trying to get away. Within 5 minutes, the snake is just exhausted. They don't really fight you after that, and you can start feeding them into a bag. The biggest python I ever caught was with another female contractor. It was 15 feet 9 inches and weighed 100 pounds. I'm lying on this big snake and trying to catch my breath. I could hear the other contractor behind me talking, and I told her, "You know, you can jump on at any time." She goes, "I have been." I thought, "Oh my gosh, we're in trouble." But we laugh about it now. With this job, you get addicted to the adrenaline. No one's in it for the money, believe me. I'm watching the moon come up, the bugs, foxes, coyotes, bobcats, and some gators and crocodiles. It's the best gig ever. Anne Gordon Vega, 64, the mother of two adult sons, is a ceramic artist in Miami and a contractor for the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. Next up, taking care of dead in front of a million people. Dan Salinger shares his dementia caregiving journey on social media, inspiring others. About 2.5 years ago, we found bruises on my dad's hip and shoulder. He had obviously fallen but had no memory of it. That was the moment my siblings and I knew he could no longer live alone. We moved him that day. Now my dad lives half the time with my brother Mark and half the time with me. Our other 4 siblings help out too. Caring for someone with dementia is not a one-person or a two-person job. I had started a TikTok channel during the pandemic to document my family's life. When Dad moved in, he started showing up in the videos, and he quickly became the star of the channel. People fell in love with him. Some of the most interesting videos are from when he wakes up. His memory is completely reset, and he doesn't know what city he's in. So I go, "Dad, okay, so here's what's going on. You've got memory loss. You live with your kids. Today you're at my house. What other questions do you have?" And whatever questions he may have, I try to answer. That's every single morning. My dad gets recognized a lot when we're out, and people are very respectful. But sometimes the 2% of comments that are negative can be overwhelming, like someone saying, "You're exploiting your father." But I'm actually really protective of him. He's dealing with this with dignity, and we always try to show that. I think people appreciate seeing how difficult it all is, and that we sometimes fail. There's repetition, interruption, continuous questions, at times every 2 minutes. It's emotionally draining to explain to somebody that their little brother died 15 years ago, saying, "You don't remember it, but trust me, you grieved." What makes sharing the videos worthwhile is when people email me to say, "Hey, I'm bringing my dad to live with me." Seeing us do it has convinced them to at least try. I don't want to make people who put their parents in dementia care feel guilty. Not everyone is capable of doing this because of financial or other reasons, but those emails really move me. My dad still parents us and our kids. He asks about us. He advises us. And when you have a million people following you on TikTok, it opens up opportunities that you wouldn't have had otherwise. All of those followers are there because of Dad. We're extremely appreciative of him. He doesn't know how much he has done for us. Dan Salinger, 55, is an attorney in Elk Grove, California. And finally, from this section for today, bringing down the big house, former convict Richard Loya shares the theater work that saved him. South Central L.A., where I was brought up, was full of gangs and drugs. At 15, I was assaulted, and it kept happening. I joined a gang because my friends in it weren't getting beat up, and I wanted protection. Within a year, I had killed someone. At 16, I was tried as an adult and sentenced to 27 years to life. Prison was hell. I disconnected from humanity. I knew I had to be punished. But I couldn't show I was scared, so I put on this mask of, "I'm angry." After 17 or 18 years, I went to my first parole board hearing. They told me, "Come back in 5 years. Then come back in 4 years. Then come back in 3 years. They saw this hardened person. There are classes in prison that we hope will help us change. I did dozens. Nothing worked. But in 2016... the Actors Gang Prison Project arrived for an intensive 7-day class. The work allows you to play. It's based on centuries-old theater, Commedia dell'arte. You put on costumes, play games, and do exercises. We were allowed to be vulnerable. By the third day, I had cried at least twice. I started feeling the change. A year later, in 2017, the parole board found me suitable, and I was released. I went to thank the people who helped me. My instructor asked, "What if we took you back inside to teach?" I told him to sign me up. Within months, I was going back in. Now I'm co-directing a play. Every day I think about my victim and their family. I can't change what I did. I wish I could. So to honor them, I chose to change and give back. When I teach people, I can say, I was in your shoes, and they're inspired to change. It gives them hope. Richard Loya, 51, works as a program manager of the Actors Gang Prison Project in Culver City, California. Actually, we have one more. We have an infant not breathing. 10 years after she left nursing, Tamara Penzino stepped in to help a family in crisis. Usually I'm the last one to get into the center of things. I'm not the kind of person who goes toward drama. But on a flight several months ago, I heard a flight attendant calling, "Do we have a doctor on board? We have an infant not breathing." I spent a few seconds looking up and down the aisle, praying that a doctor would come forward. I had been trained as a nurse, but I had quit working 10 years earlier. "Do you see anyone standing?" I asked my husband. "No," he said. And then he stepped aside so I could get out of my seat, and I ran to the back of the plane. A young man was standing in the aisle holding a baby about 3 months old. Her head was lolling back and her lips were blue. I started asking him questions like, had the baby been eating? Was it possible she was choking? Once I was sure she didn't have anything caught in her airway, the next step was to stimulate her. With such tiny babies, if you flick their heels and rub their feet, they will sometimes take a breath. I did that, then shook her chest and rubbed her and pinched her thighs, and I began to see a bit of color come back into her lips. So I went through the whole pattern again. A flight attendant brought some oxygen, and that helped the baby's color return too. After a while, they did locate a doctor, and we all moved up to the front so she could examine the baby. That's when a young woman came up to me. I hadn't even noticed her. I was so laser-focused on the baby. I asked, "Are you the mother?" She said, "Yeah." And then she started crying, and I hugged her and reassured her. We stayed at the front of the plane, hugging and talking and watching closely until we were all confident the baby was okay. Then we took our seats. The parents were both great, so strong, and so young. This was their first baby, but everyone looks young to me these days. The pilot called ahead for an ambulance to meet our plane on the tarmac, and the little family were the first ones off. As they left, the father held the baby up in the air, and everyone on the plane stood up and clapped. It was something else. There had been a TV meteorologist on the plane. He made a news report, and suddenly I was getting all this attention. Reporters would ask me, "How does it feel to be a hero?" But to me, a hero is someone who puts themselves into harm's way in order to save someone else. I didn't do that. All I did was offer my knowledge to help. I think we all have a responsibility to do that when we can. Tamara Penzino, 49, is a woodworker and craftsperson in Evans City, Pennsylvania. Now, since we're talking about people today, let's look at Lucky Man. After being slammed by cancer and COVID-19 3 years ago, Jeff Bridges wasn't sure he'd be able to walk again, much less regain the mojo that made him a Hollywood icon. We won't be able to do this whole article, but let's see what we can find out about the man. Jeff Bridges thrusts a single foot onto his desk, a muscular foot, clad in a funky rubber sandal, a well-cared-for foot to be sure, surprisingly slender, unsurprisingly pale, lit by late afternoon sunlight from his window. There it is, Jeff Bridges' foot. Even his foot is cool. I'm just saying. He has just worked out. His thick gray hair is wet and slicked back. Bridges is bearded, bespectacled, and tan, looking very put together in a gray button-down, yet undeniably windblown, having forgotten to button up. And he isn't throwing his bare foot on his desk, his hands behind his head, in some stagey life is good pose. It's just a single foot. We've been discussing the establishing shots of his television show, The Old Man, FX. in which his eponymous character, an arguably infamous CIA assassin, is introduced to his audience without a hint of intrigue or international tension. Instead, the show opens with Bridges sitting in darkness on the edge of a bed, groaning and sighing at the prospect of getting up again, and again, to pee. A bedside clock indifferently glowers up the narrowing intervals of his sleep, of his time for sleep, 1:15, 3:03, 5:42, 6:32 a.m. Later that morning, on the same bed, he undertakes the painful contortions of getting socks onto his old man feet. He is the titular character, after all, the old man. "Don't you hate putting on socks?" Bridges asks, and that's when, ta-da, his sandaled foot is raised. "See," he says, "this is why I don't put on socks." Bridges then plugs the sandals. He clearly thinks they might help someone. "Check these out, men. They're for foot recovery." I don't know if there are any readers out there who have Morton's neuroma. It's like a nerve thing. "These are the only shoes I can wear." He's laughing, kind of pumped, and positively excited to have the right shoes. "They work great, man." Like the characters he sometimes portrays, Jeff Bridges speaks in comma splices, punctuates the air in exclamation points, and end stops most of his sentences with an encouraging, "you know," or "man." Checking in with me from the home in Santa Barbara, California, that he shares with his wife of 46 years, Susan Geston, Bridges tells stories, gesticulates, throws around ideas, philosophy, love, politics, in pieces, freely laughs, and gets choked up in the very same inevitably fractured sentence. The man is a talker. He offers up his thinking without guile, that he's learned what he's learned across his journey, the low ruts of chemo, the dark nights of COVID, and his advice on the importance of making art, which books to read, the best music to dance to, and anything else that might just help whoever he's talking to. Amy Brenneman, one of his co-stars in The Old Man, told me, "In many ways, work just interprets a longer conversation for Jeff." We're here, in part, to talk about living and the work he is still doing at 73. So I ask about the simple declaration of the old man's title, which doesn't hint at the shadowy edge of modern military history, political intrigue, really serious fighting, car chases, and, well, parenting, which makes up the sinew of the story. Is it something of a disguise or insult? Are you actually the old man? Bridges humphs. "I'm 73 now, so I guess I qualify," he says. He purses his lips and squints. It turns out there's a bunch of us old codgers there. Me, John Lithgow, 77, and Joel Gray, 91. Trumps us all. Bridges continues with a searching look. "With us guys, anyway, if we're lucky, we're all old men, finally." If Jeff Bridges can ever truly be said to pause when he's in the middle of one of his riffs, this may be that very moment. He goes quiet, and just like that, he's not riffing, not capturing images, like the acclaimed photographer he became while winning awards for his acting, not jamming like the gifted musician he has proven to be on film and off. Jeff Bridges weighs his last words. "Finally." It's a tangible word, a word of consequences, a word with claws for him. As an older man who is himself closing in on finality, because early in the production of The Old Man, he was hit first with a surprising advanced case of cancer and then by a nearly fatal bout of COVID. But of course, pretty soon, he will start talking about all of that. He got sick, death came upon him, and it turns out that Jeff Bridges prepared for more living, even as he approached the possibility of his end. So we'll continue with that part of his story later, but let's look at a few little tidbits here. Jeff Bridges is a legitimate lifelong actor. He made his first appearance in the film The Company She Keeps in 1951 with his mother, actress Dorothy Bridges, as a six-month-old. A few years later, he began making appearances along with his brother Beau in Sea Hunt. 1958 to 1961, his father Lloyd's hit TV show. He popped into the national consciousness in the widely acclaimed The Last Picture Show in 1971 and has been making movies of every stripe since, 70-plus to date, and most prominently Heaven's Gate, Jagged Edge, Tron, The Fabulous Baker Boys, Starman, The Big Lebowski, True Grit, and Crazy Heart, for which he won an Oscar. But his reach as an artist has not been confined to TV and movies. He's a talented photographer with countless exhibitions and two books of behind-the-scenes movie shots, as well as a country musician with three albums as frontman to his own band, The Abiders. He also paints and makes ceramics. It's worth a trip down the rabbit hole of his website, jeffbridges.com, for a look at the breadth of his commitment to the artistic process and his delightful products. Photography, painting, drawing, acting, I kind of look at them all as the same, he tells me. Each of them is a version of me being as creative as I can, focusing my creativity on a particular thing. Like anyone watching stretching into new areas of expression, Bridges still finds it hard to get started on projects from time to time. I resist, he says. I'm kind of a lazy guy, you know? I don't like to work and all that stuff. I push it off, and then I say, well, I've got to do it, you know? Come on. And then I let the clay and my hands have a dance together. And as the clay becomes a ceramic bowl, I engage. You get engaged, man. It happens. He thinks everyone should try out different art forms. The task is to get out of the way and let the thing rip through you. So this article does continue with more about Jeff Bridges, and we will look into that next time and see what else he can tell us about his special life. Well, folks, we have come to the end of our time for today. For today's episode of Modern Maturity, be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.